Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Thursday, March 17, 2016. It's 9:05 a.m. We're in Alaska's state capitol, room 532 in Juneau, Alaska. With me at the table this morning, Co-Chairman Kelly.
Good morning.
Vice Chairman Michicki.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
Good morning.
Senator Bishop.
Good morning.
Senator Olson.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
Hello.
And myself, Senator Anna McKinnon, Co-Chair of Finance. On today's agenda, we have listed SB 101. We're going to take SB 101 second. We have a person waiting to testify on SB 170, so we're going to take it a bit out of order and go with SB 170 first. Before that, though, I would like to ask Jeff Jesse to join us at the microphone. We've had a bit of good news this morning and wanted to share it with the Senate Finance Committee and encourage the other body to continue a quest to provide the people of Alaska services in a most efficient and effective way. This committee, when we sent out a finance a fiscal note, had some encouragement that the Mental Health Trust Board was going to meet and have a conversation about the actions that we were taking at a state level, and I thought it would be nice to share an update from that meeting. Mr. Jesse, if you could introduce yourself for the record, and then please update the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jeff Jesse. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The trustees met yesterday. As I testified to earlier in the Senate Bill 74 process, they consider Medicaid reform to be one of the, if not the most important thing in the history of the trust. Yesterday, I'm pleased to tell you the trustees approved nearly $10 million in assistance over 3 years to assist in the reform effort. Nearly $5 million of that will supplant general funds that are currently in the fiscal notes. We've had some excellent conversations with the department around sequentially what needs to happen and how quickly it needs to happen in order to reach the goals that you've set in the bill. The good news is that it's doable, and the better news is the trustees are willing to basically foot the bill to get it jump-started. So we're looking forward to continuing to work with you and the department and hopefully the other body to get this bill signed into law and get going.
Mr. Jesse, thank you for that. A great start to a happy St. Patty's Day to all. Any questions from committee members? With that, Mr. Jesse, thank you for sharing that news for Alaska.
God bless the Irish.
And the trust beneficiaries. The first bill before Senate Finance today is SB 170, an act authorizing the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys to collect fees for facilities, equipment, products, and services relating to accounting for certain program receipts and providing for an effective date. Senator Giesel, Ike, if you would join her at the microphone. If you could introduce yourself for the record, and then please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Senator Kathy Giesel. I represent Senate District N in Anchorage and my staff.
For the record, Madam Chair, Ike Gilops of staff to Senator Giesel.
Madam Chair, thank you for hearing Senate Bill 170. This bill is another step to making our revenue-generating department, the Department of Natural Resources, even more revenue generating, in fact, another step toward becoming self-sufficient. The Geologic Materials Center is the subject of the bill, though it does reach a bit further. So I brought with me today a sample of the kind of item that you would find in the Geologic Materials Center. This is a core from a drill of an oil field. The Geologic Materials Center has been located for the last several decades in Eagle River in Conexes, which I know all of you know what those are. They're unheated metal containers. The materials were getting wet. Of course, they were unheated, so they were deteriorating. A few years ago, the Sam's Club in East Anchorage closed. And it's a perfect facility. You know what Sam's Clubs look like. They're large warehouses. The Walmart Corporation sold the facility at a really reduced price to the Department of Natural Resources. The structure was reconfigured, and it opened about 2 years ago as our Geologic Materials Center. It's very similar to the GMC that I toured in Texas a few years ago. Texas has either two or three of these, and they're about four times the size of ours, but regardless, these are money-generating facilities because they contain a library. A library of rocks. Rocks for mineral deposits as well as oil and gas. And they're of interest to explorers. In fact, we in your information sheet, you have an FAQ sheet in your materials that go with this bill. You'll see in there a statement from Repsol. And Repsol talks about the role of the GMC in their recent discovery on the Colville Delta, which is now known as the Armstrong-Repsol discovery. This is a significant oil field that they've discovered, an estimated 500 million to 3.7 billion barrels of oil, possibly the largest oil field discovered since Prudhoe Bay. The GMC facilitated that discovery and exploration. So charging to use the facility was always the plan. But when DNR went to do this, they found out they don't have the authority to charge folks to use the facility. So that's what the bill is for. So this, again, Madam Chair, is not a cost to the state. It's actually a cost generator. My staff can do a sectional if you'd like, and then I know that Mr. Masterman is online and can certainly give you more details.
Further questions from committee members? Senator Giesel, I have one. On page 1, line 11 and line 13 talk about printing and the publication of reports. And I'm wondering if that's an antiquated figure or if it's something we actually want them to do. Can we use digital imagery versus actually going to print and publishing? And if you, I can ask Mr. Masterman in a moment if, do you have any comment on that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Certainly Mr. Masterman will be the expert on answering that question. However, all of these materials are available to view online digitally, but the maps, often folks want to have a tangible paper copy. Mr. Masterman can give you more details about the printing costs, etc.
Thank you. Mr. Galapas, would you like to walk us through a sectional?
For the record, Madam Chair, Ike Galapso, staff to Senator Giesel. Madam Chair, to begin the sectional for the committee, Section 1 of the bill would provide that the fees that would be collected by the Department of Natural Resources Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys under the newly created 4108045, that essentially is Section 3 of this bill, would be accounted for separately and those appropriations, and not made from the unrestricted general fund. So this is the creation of that receipt authority subaccount. Section 2 of the bill is 4108030 being modified to conform to Section 3 of the bill. That conformity is twofold. One is that in the existing language that's being omitted, the division was able to charge for the acquisition from the public of printed reports, but the proceeds would go into the general fund. Since Section 2 would have it go into a receipt authority subaccount, that needed to be obviated. Section 3, which is the heart of the bill, creates a new statute, 4108045, and that permits the department's Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys to institute and charge for the collection of fees for its facilities, its equipment, its products, and its services. It was also in this section, Madam Chair, that the Resources Committee amended the bill and instituted a waiver of fees for a student utilizing any of those services or equipment for educational purposes. Section 4 of the bill would amend the uncodified law to the state of Alaska to allow the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys to promulgate regulations necessary to conform with the statute. Section 5 would make the effective date of Section 4, the permission to promulgate regulations, effective immediately. And Section 6 would give Sections 1 through 3 of this bill an effective date of July 1st of this year. That is the sectional analysis, Madam Chair.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a question for Mr. Masterman.
Okay. Mr. Masterman, are you available online?
The line is unmuted.
Yes, I am here. Can you hear me?
We can. Welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here remotely.
Senator Bishop asked a question. Mr. Masterman, I'll have him restate that question.
Good morning, sir. I'd like to know how you, the department's going to arrive at a fee schedule.
Through the chair, could you repeat the question? I heard the first part, but the second part cut out.
How does the department propose to arrive at the fee schedule?
I believe, through the chair, Senator Bishop, you're asking how the department is going to arrive at the ultimate revenue stream. Is that correct?
Yeah, a fee schedule, yes.
Okay, the fee schedule, we have reached out to other geologic material centers around the nation and in Western Canada and obtained their fee schedules. And we are evaluating those, and our goal and our intent is to make our fee schedule fairly squarely in the middle of what other people are charging for very similar services and materials that maybe we provide there. So, you know, we want people to pay for the facility, pay for the services that they use, but we don't want to discourage use by having fees that are too high. Does that answer your question, sir?
Mr. Masterson, my staff is asking, if you've got us on video, we're getting feedback, could you mute the video, audio of the meeting, if you're watching us at the same time? It's feeding back into our system.
Yes, I do not have you on video.
Senator Giesel.
Madam Chair, I would call members' attention to this graph that was in the bill packet, which shows where Alaska would fall. I believe this was what Mr. Masterman was referring to.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Masterman. That answers my question.
Are there other questions from committee members? I have one other question. Becky, on page 2, line 25, the division shall waive fees under the sections for students. Do you think this is a bypass mechanism, or in public testimony, did you hear something that you suggested that you've added that as a waiver and a change? Why does it say shall instead of may?
For the record, Ike Gillops, the staff to Senator Giesel. Madam Chair, in the testimony that the Senate Resources Committee undertook between Mr. Masterman along with committee members, it was the intent of the division to promulgate regulations to do such a waiver. The concern among several committee members was that regulations have a way of being mutable, and that just because you intend to put regulations in may not mean that that will actually occur. So by putting in that statutory language, it would ensure that students being able to utilize those facilities would still be able to do so without the danger of regulations rescinding themselves.
Senator Michiki.
I wasn't going to say anything, but you have a way of reading my mind, Madam Chair. So the thought there was that industry would be the parties that would help offset the cost of running the facility. However, it wasn't meant as a way to in any way discourage use of the facility by Alaska students, and we wanted to make that point perfectly clear.
Senator Michiki, Senator Giesel, I'm just trying to understand the Resource Committee's thought process. What if industry starts using students to run through when you negate the revenue stream that you're trying to allow them to collect by use of students or interns?
Madam Chair, thank you, Senator Giesel, for the record. In the FAQs document that you received on page 2, the question that begins that is, what is the typical user of the GMC? And it calls out that oil and gas and mineral geologists make up 50% to 60% of their clientele at this time, academia 20%, other government agencies, BLM, etc. And then you see public and school groups, 5% to 10%. And our intention was that elementary school, junior high, and high school classes that might be interested in careers in geology would be able to come. Teachers could bring their groups and not face a charge for bringing those students. So that was the committee's intention. I understand your concern, Madam Chair, that students is a broad term. I believe that the division is very clear on our intent, and we were clear on theirs. So it is somewhat our trust that in regulation they'll spell out the level of student that would be allowed to enter without a charge.
So if I might, Senator Giesel, then you see academia or a university student very differently than the student that you're intending to target under this waiver.
That was the intention of the committee, yes, Madam Chair.
So if I could, I'll speak with your staff offline to see if we could do something like pre-K through 12. Specifically, I was wondering about using undergraduates that will be students or other members of academia that would provide great value. And if that's a larger portion of the revenue stream, say in the 20% level, we'll work offline on that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions from committee members? Senator Machicki.
Madam Chair, I hear what you're saying. I think an intern working either under contract or, say, for the summer for an actual industry party would have to, the industry party would pay for, just in our view, I think, would pay for use of the facility. However, if a young student that's a normal college student were interested in some research on the facility, I know in my personal view it was that the facility would be there for their use without charge.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Any other questions? Senator Olson?
Senator Diesel, how much revenue do you anticipate that's going to be gathered by these charges? Do you have any idea? And if you don't, is there a way to compare them with what other states are doing or other, even in international GMCs?
Thank you, Senator Olson. Through the chair, I would defer that question to Mr. Masterman. The division has done some projections.
Senator Olson, if I could direct you to the fiscal note in the packet today, it says in revenue in year this next year, 2017, $85,000, 18, $200,000, 19, $275,000, 2020, $350,000, 2021, $425,000, 2022, $485,000. So I think they have an estimate as usage climbs, they anticipate, based on the percentages, that those would go up. Does that answer the question, or would I can bring Mr. Masterman back?
In the interest of time, let's not do that. I saw the numbers there. The validity of the numbers is probably what I was asking more questions on, but that can be done in a private conversation.
Mr. Olson, let's ask Mr. Masterman. Sure. He's been kind enough to call in.
Mr. Masterman? To the chair, Senator Olson.
Mr. Masterman?
Those are our estimates based on our past history of usage and the new services that we anticipate offering through the facility. To date, we haven't received a single dollar in revenue, so it's a little fuzzy. We'll have a much clearer picture once we start charging revenues. And until that point in time, these are very much estimates, and I just want everybody to be clear on that.
And that's as close as we can get, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Bishop.
I just wanted to comment. I like the bill. I looked at the proposed fee schedule in the back, and somebody that's done some exploration know what's the cost associated with exploration work. I find it very reasonable, and could save an explorer a lot of time and effort in getting some good baseline data to see if they wanted to go forward in an area, and it is a treasure trove of information, so I support it.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator Machicki.
Mr. Masterman, I didn't ask this question in resources, but I'm curious. Obviously, the center will be the clearinghouse for core materials and physical geologic samples. Would the center also be the location where members of industry would obtain electronic seismic data as well?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, yes, that is our intent. We are working with the Division of Oil and Gas to make those tax credit seismic surveys available through the Geologic Material Center.
Just follow up, Madam Chair?
Senator Machicki.
Would you assume that would likely be the most valuable data that would be available at the center?
Through the chair, that is a distinct possibility, and we are having ongoing discussions of how to make that material available to generate revenue for the state and for the facility. But it is our intent to charge for that material, and we do feel that it is extremely valuable and could be a pretty good revenue stream for the facility.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Mr. Masterman, this is Senator McKinnon. I don't see a relationship in the reduction of operations. You're increasing revenue. It should supplant some general funds coming in to support what your team is doing. Is there a reason we don't see a negative in your operating budget in correspondence with the revenue that's coming in?
Yes, Madam Chair, if I could speak to that. And if you need further information, I think Director of Admin Services, Fabian Peter Contess, is there as well, and she might be able to give you a more well-rounded answer than I can. But at this point, we are generating revenue to bring the building into the public building fund. And the public building fund sort of has an entry-level threshold in a cost sense. So until our revenues get up to that threshold, we really, to be perfectly honest, we don't need the money. We would appreciate having the money, but it's our intent that until we reach that financial threshold to enter the fund, that the revenues generated would enter the general fund, and they would not come to us at this time. And I believe that is explained in the text or language that's included in the fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Masterman. We'll have our legislative finance take a look at following that revenue stream. And you're right, if it just drops into the general fund, your expenses would remain the same. Any other questions on the CS for Senate Bill Number 170, Resources, Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys to collect fees for facilities, equipment, products, and services? Thank you, Senator Giesel. I'd like to open the public hearing on the CS for Senate Bill Number 170, Resources. Is there anyone here in Juneau wishing to testify on SB 170? Is there anyone off-net or online wishing to testify on SB 170? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. Ken Papp, did you have any comments that you'd like to provide the committee?
I have no comments at this time, Madam Chair.
Thank you for joining us online today. With that, brief at ease.
We're back on the record. Before the body is the CS for Senate Bill number 101, an act relating to certain fees charged or collected by the Department of Natural Resource. Mr. Ellis, could you introduce SB 101 to the committee?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Ben Ellis. I'm the Director of the Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation within the Department of Natural Resources. SB 101 is a governor-introduced bill. In the present form, would deal with a technical amendment. The current statute says that we can only collect a park fee in a park. And we collect, say, public use cabins online. Or people go to the public information office in DNR and get their annual passes. Neither of those are located in a park. So when this bill was first being reviewed by law, they suggested that that change be made. The bill in front of you that passed out of House Resources, that is the component that moved forward. There was another component that did not move forward, Madam Chairman.
Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, Mr. Ellis, are you? Senator Dunleavy.
Just a quick question, slightly off topic, but on topic. There are fees for the parks, correct? Look, Dropbox fee, you go and you pay your $5 or $10.
Senator Dunleavy, through the chair, there is for developed facilities. The statute specifically calls for developed facilities. So, say, parking lots with restrooms would be considered a developed facility. A parking lot without a restroom would not be considered a developed facility. So, campgrounds, parking lots with restrooms, those types of, for user fees, yes. And they can either pay per day on parking or they can purchase a annual parking pass.
So they can get a pass. That was my question. Thanks.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Ellis, on the original bill, there must have been a reason that they had it in there. Because you have a number of departments that are, including law, that are looking at it. Why wasn't there a reason for it, having it so that you had to collect the fees in the park?
In the original intent of the governor's bill was to allow the state parks to sell merchandise, and I've got some, and I don't think I need to pass it around like the other, but hats and sweatshirts and T-shirts, for a profit, mm-hmm. and therefore eventually decrease our revenue, our dependence on UGF. It was modeled on, we did a survey of 20 states, of which 18 have some type of a merchandise bill, and only two don't. The profit that was generated varied greatly depending upon how much effort and money was put into the program. Kansas, which is, I got a copy, a sweatshirt from them, receives very little from their fees for merchandise. South Carolina, they net about $1.5 to $2 million more than what the program cost to run. Georgia does $3 million. So the original concept was to provide an opportunity for state parks to sell merchandise for a profit. The current statute only allows us to sell an item for cost. I'll give you an example. 5 years ago when I came in, we had just finished our 40th anniversary of state parks. And it had a really nice photo contest, beautiful photos of state parks. So we took eight of the very nicest pictures, gave the credit on the back of the card to the photographer and the location, and it was a blank note card. And the idea was that we were going to sell these, and the intent was we were going to sell them for, it cost $5.52 to create it. We were going to sell it for $10 or $12, take the revenue, put it back in to sell, to purchase more cards. Once we got them to this stage, I found out that I couldn't do that. The only thing that I could do from statute was to sell it for $5.53, the cost. So that was the impetus that the original language was trying to address.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Any further questions? Director Ellis, I see that the Resource Committee, if I direct the members' attention to their packet, to the original piece of legislation that you brought in, remove Section 2. Can you explain any further why or what the thoughts were for removing Section 2 of the originally proposed bill?
Madam Chair, I think accurately I can only refer to the comments that were made. As far as why it was removed, I would leave that to the committee members. But there was a concern expressed during the hearing that this bill may be in competition with the private sector, and there was some hesitancy on that issue.
Okay, Senator Bishop.
On that, Madam Chairman, thank you, Director Ellis. On that point, does this bill, will in its present form, get you where you want to go?
Madam Chair, through the Chair, Senator Bishop, this bill, the way it's been modified now, will alleviate a technical issue that even a year ago the Department of Law did not think was a serious issue, that we could still charge on the Internet for public use cabins and that we're not going to lose the revenue. But they thought if somebody was going to be opening the statute, that it would be good just to clean it up. But the way it is written now, we would still be under the current statute that would prohibit the division to sell merchandise for a profit.
Follow up, Senator Bishop.
I'll hold my comment for right now. Thank you.
I would just throw out to the committee that it's a public policy call that the general government has tried in the past not to compete with the public sector on many items and let the public and private compete and let the private sector do what private business does best. So it's a call for consideration. I hope you'll ponder that. And then if you have individual thoughts on this, if you provide me amendments by next Wednesday, that would be helpful.
Maybe Tuesday. One further question, Madam Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. She just brought up the other aspect coming from the private sector. Are there private entities out there that are selling the same type of comparable apparel that you, and utensils that you are?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, we are not selling any product, even at cost. To my knowledge, there's no company in Alaska that is selling Alaska State Park identified, like Chugach State Park or Wood-Tik-Chik State Park sweatshirts, t-shirts, hats. There is an internet-based company I finally located. It's in Seattle. That because the names of our parks are in the public domain, if I wanted a sweatshirt that said Wood-Tik-Chik State Park, Alaska, I could contact them and they would create a sweatshirt and send it to me at $32 or $42. That's the only company that I know of that is doing that.
No further questions, Madam Chairman.
Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill's a little bit like the bill we just heard on a department trying to offset the cost. And if the product's not available, it's just something for us to consider. And going outside, I don't know that I see that as competition, if that competition in the private sector is in another state. And I appreciate the department bringing this forward. I think it's something I hope we'll take seriously on considering. I mean, I don't want to pay a park employee a large salary so that they can make a few bucks selling a t-shirt. But if there are seasonal folks that are operating in a fraction of that, and it's something for us to consider.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. For public disclosure, I served for several years as the a merchandise manager at JCPenney's, and there are millions of dollars a day that are transacted on T-shirts and trinkets that go through our state. And what I heard Director Ellis say to me in a meeting prior to the one today is that it would be nice for Alaska to get credit for an Alaska logo, as an example, on an Alaska shirt, so that an Alaskan would have credit for distributing proudly our state products, and that they wouldn't necessarily even, under one scenario, we could limit it to the state parks sold in a retail location to the general public, but in another way, if we created a logo and put it on a T-shirt, they could go to a wholesaler and have that T-shirt distributed by the private sector, but we would receive proceeds because we were the ones who owned the logo, had the shirts printed, and then had someone else in the private sector sell them. So we could be a wholesaler of our own brand of state park memorabilia. Director Ellis, am I accurately stating what we had talked about as another source of potential income where we would partner with the private sector in an item that we thought was representative in a good way of representing Alaska in the...
Madam Chair, you're exactly right. You captured that sentiment. We would create the T-shirt or whatever it is. We would sell it to the retail or to a retailer at, say, 20% markup, and they would do it at 25 or whatever.
A wholesaler.
Wholesaler, yeah.
You could go directly to the retailer. You'd make
I mean,
more
through a wholesale. It would be a wholesale. The governor's original bill, that was the vehicle or that was the mechanism that was suggested.
Thank you. Just so that we're clear on the choices and if someone wants to offer an amendment. And to be clear, let's look through things. I know, but so amendments are due on this bill by next Wednesday. Senator Dunleavy.
Just a comment. I think it's a great idea. I'm glad you're doing it. I mentioned to Mr. Ellis before the meeting started, I said we used to give these away to the state of Alaska, and things have changed so dramatically. We're now trying to do what a lot of other states have done forever. And I would hope that, you know, some of us are not huge on taxes, and this is essentially a different way of generating revenue for the parks. I think it's a great idea, and I would hope that you become even more creative on how to market the parks, because in essence it becomes a user fee for that specific group that wants to get the money. So anyway, I commend you on the concept.
Madam Chair, Senator Dunleavy, thank you for that comment. Yes, in fact, I believe that a strong program can do a number of things, and if possible, Madam Chair, could I read one sentence on this topic from a director in New Hampshire?
Director Ellis.
We're fairly passionate about our retail operation in the New Hampshire State Parks. When you change the dialogue from cost control to revenue growth opportunities, all of a sudden new doors open, employees' attitudes shift, and we build a broader customer base of support, loyalty, and advocacy for the state park system.
Senator Bishop.
Madam Chair, thank you. I also concur with both my colleagues' comments on my left and my right, and I want to make sure we get this bill, in my opinion, where it needs to go. I just looked at three labels in Bangladesh, Honduras, and Mexico, so I'm not really worried about putting anybody out of business in the United States selling products to maintain our Alaska State Parks. We support the tourism business in this building right here at this table. Alaska is the destination for tourism, and I want to make sure, to the best of my ability, you've got the assets to make Alaska the destination for the traveling public.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. And I would just leave with Made in America, if it can compete, is a good thing, and I would throw out that if we could partner with our prisons
to actually manufacture some of those T-shirts, but maybe we could get a back-to-work program going that could represent our parks and rehabilitation, too. But that's just a personal plea of trying to get something, a back-to-work program in our prisons up and going so that we can have some reentry that's successful. Senator Olson, did I see you? Would you? Senator Olson.
Yes, Madam Chairman, thank you. Mr. Ellis, as you look at the original bill under Section 2, where it talks about the department may sell merchandise for informational and educational promotional purposes, that portion of the bill was removed. Does this bill indeed still do what the department wants to go ahead and do by selling merchandise for information, promotional, and educational reasons?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the current, the bill in its current form that was passed out of Senate Resources does not achieve that, no.
Senator Olson, and follow-up?
If it doesn't achieve it, why are we hearing the bill?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, last year, I believe it was in April, there were two hearings in Senate Resources. Senate Resources decided to eliminate the part that deals with merchandise and move forward the part that was the technical amendment that said we could sell things that we can sell, like boat launch fees or boat launch passes or parking passes, or take money over the internet for a public use cabin. That those things are not in a park, and the Department of Law thought that if this statute was being cracked open, that that correction should be made. The correction was the only thing that moved forward, sir.
Senator Olson, let me be clear. That's why I was vague, and I'll try to be clear. Section 2 was removed from the original bill that allows Director Ellis to do what he has proposed as an opportunity to provide additional support that would not be general fund dollars. And so if someone would like to offer the amendment, Section 2 is in your packet that has been removed from the resource. But I wanted to make clear that it is a public policy decision, and some people, specifically some people in our body, may feel like this is competition with the private sector. And so that's the policy consideration that we should be taking into account prior to offering the amendment to reinsert it in the bill, or talk to other our colleagues to see why they might have taken it out. But if I receive an amendment by Wednesday, I might propose that amendment for your consideration. But just wanted to make sure that there was a clear distinction in the CS that we have that is not all of what the department had asked for.
Can I ask one further question on that point?
Senator Olson, followed by Senator Dunleavy, followed by Senator Machicki.
Mr. Ellis, is the department in favor of the legislation as is currently written?
Could you repeat the question,
Don? Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Ellis, is the department in favor of the legislation as it's written now?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the department is supportive of clarifying where we can receive our revenue. It does not achieve the purpose that the governor's bill laid out in the original bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
Just a very brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Back on the record, Senator Machicki.
There were members on resources that I sort of talked about that a little earlier, that were worried about the competition with the private sector, and were worried about expensive state employees being engaged in the sale of these materials. I personally did not share that concern. What I would like to see is, if we do amend this bill, that we also add something to the language that requests that Alaskan businesses are used in the production of these materials. I heard your comment about the prisons, but it's really easy for those of us that buy a lot of printed materials. You can go online, save a few bucks, and have someone in Minnesota produce them in bulk and send them to you. We have very talented embroiderers and screen printers in the state, and I think a good compromise might be that we use the Alaska private sector to produce these goods, and that might satisfy some of those that were concerned about competition with the private sector.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Senator Ellis, I'm sorry, Director Ellis. We do have a Senator Ellis.
I know.
Director Ellis.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a comment on dealing with competition with the private sector. The division is very sensitive to that because in many ways that's what we do. There are public campgrounds and there are private campgrounds. I have state boat launches and there are private boat launches. We are constantly seeking the balance between providing something to the public that another sector may commercially be providing. So we're very sensitive to that. And if we would move forward with this, this would be even more sensitive, and we would look at it in a very close light.
Thank you. Senator Machicki? Thank you for explaining the bill before us. I'd like to open the public hearing on Senate Bill number 101, an act relating to certain fees charged and collected by the Department of Natural Resources. Is there anyone here in Juneau wishing to testify on Senate Bill 101? Is there anyone online or off net wishing to testify on Senate Bill 101? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. We're going to set aside Senate Bill 101. Amendments are due by next Wednesday. The next bill before us, we're going to bring back before the committee Senate Bill 124. We will not be moving 124 this morning. I do anticipate trying to move this bill this afternoon quickly. If I could ask Denise Danilo, the Director of the Alaska Commission on Aging, to come forward, and I'd like to go through the fiscal notes. Denise, are you prepared to cover the fiscal note this morning?
Good morning. For the record, my name is Denise Danilo, Executive Director for the Alaska Commission on Aging. I think also I would like to call Jacqueline Zifrus. I know I didn't say that correctly. And she'll be coming up here very shortly. Just in preparation for this discussion, our sources of funding basically include general funds, mental health funds, as well as an interagency receipt from the Division of Senior and Disability Services. And we receive Mental Health Trust Authority authorized receipts for one of our positions. So do you want us to go through the fiscal note?
That is what I requested.
Okay.
For the record, my name is Jacqueline Ziegenfuss. I am the Administrative Operations Manager for the Division of Senior and Disability Services. So the fiscal note before us for the Commission on Aging basically represents the total funding that is also included in the Governor's operating budget for the Alaska Commission on Aging. The total operating expenditures are $539,700, and then as you can see below, the breakout is $42,900 in general fund, $348,100 in interagency receipts, which is funding passed on from the Division of Senior and Disability Services to the Alaska Commission on Aging. $29,600 in GFMH and $119,100 in mental health trust dollars.
Are there questions from committee members? The ones that have come to me yesterday were, why do we have four personnel staff to support 11 board members?
Well, through the chair, this is Denise Daniello. The commission has been supported by a staff of four with 11 commission members for many years now. Back in 2004, the Commission on Aging was in the Department of Administration and served as a state unit on aging. And at that time, the decision was made to transfer the Commission on Aging over to the Department of Health and Social Services and to focus on advocacy, planning, and education for senior programs. The commission provides a large service area. We developed the state plan for senior services, which requires substantial staff support in developing the needs assessment activities, senior survey, provider survey, elder senior listening sessions. We also conduct community forums, and we advise the legislature and the governor about senior programs. Our commissioners are the eyes and ears for the commission. They are in diverse areas of the state. They also meet with other seniors in their respective communities, talk about senior issues, and bring those ideas back to the commission.
With all respect, that's what the board members do. We want to know what four staff members do. How often do your plans have to be rewritten? Because you just completed the task. So the Finance Committee would like to know what your four personnel and staff do, because the rest of the state has taken about a 22% year-to-year operating budget reduction. And so there has been an assertion for today that we should remove at least one staff, if not two, staff from support of this board, because the interagency receipts are actually general fund dollars coming from other departments.
Okay.
And we do know that you're leveraging $1 million on the other from other funds.
Actually, it's $11 million approximately of Older American Act funds, because we satisfy that federal requirement for an advisory council and a state plan. The four staff are involved with, besides developing the state plan, there is also bringing together, being a convener for a number of our partners to actually implement the state plan. And with that, there are six goals in the state plan, and 24 strategies. And 48 performance measures, and there's a lot of moving parts and pieces in terms of making sure that these goals and strategies are implemented. A lot of that effort is based on developing services to promote the health and safety, and so I don't and as well as the advocacy. I'm just in shock about the potential loss of our positions. We take a bottoms-up approach to developing our planning and advocacy activities. We make great efforts to educate Alaskans about senior issues. So there's a lot of promoting those kind of activities, the Healthy Body, Healthy Brain campaign, the Senior Fall Prevention Coalition, talking with seniors about Medicaid reform efforts, doing community forums. We also have a regular senior legislative advocacy teleconference where we talk to seniors about legislation of interest. to them and to take their input, which guides our policy and budget recommendations.
Ms. Danielle, can I get to some specific answers, if I could? What is specifically required of you under Alaska state statute that complies with the federal act?
To develop that state plan
and
also to educate Alaskans about senior issues, to be a visible advocate for seniors. These are requirements of the Older Americans Act for a state unit on aging.
Thank you. Brief it is. We're back on the record. We pulled Alaska state statute under the Alaska Commission on Aging, section 4745-240, the powers, duties, and limitations of the commission, subject to review of the department. That would be the Department of Health and Social Services. And they also work with the Commissioner of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Make recommendations directly to the governor and the legislature with respect to legislation. Approve a comprehensive statewide plan. That's number one, is the comprehensive plan. Ms. Daniela, how often is the plan reviewed?
It's reviewed annually.
And so is it readopted then, or do you have a five-year plan?
It's a four-year plan, and what we do is we gather data about the performance measures associated with the goals, and we also try to bring together stakeholders to discuss the work that's been done on the plan.
Okay. Number three, encourage and development of municipal commissioners serving older Alaskans and community-oriented programs that benefit older Alaskans. Number four, employ an executive director that serves at the pleasure of the commission. Number five, help older Alaskans lead dignified, independent, and useful lives. This is the commission as a whole, not necessarily just the admin team. Number six is request and receive reports and audits from state agencies. Ms. Daniela, what type of reports and audits are you receiving from state agencies and reviewing?
For example, we publish the annual senior snapshot, and that's in the annual report that we provide to the legislature. And so for that, we gather data on a variety of demographic, economic, health indicators, and publish that information, as well as other reports, too, that have to deal with health and safety.
Thank you. Number seven, give assistance on request to Senior Housing Office and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Number eight, provide to the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority for its review and consideration to recommendations concerning the integrated comprehensive mental health programs for persons who are described in this section. Review of and then there's a whole list of things that the commission may do. So there are eight directives.
Yes.
Can you tell us, Can you give us the position titles? Do you have an executive director? What are your other three staff positions?
We have a planner two.
I'm sorry, a what?
A planner two.
A planner, okay.
And a planner one, and an admin assistant.
Can you tell the committee what planner one and planner two does? Is that to support the statutes?
I would be happy to. The planner one is funded by funds from the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, and that position focuses largely on planning and advocacy for serving senior trust beneficiaries. These are individuals with Alzheimer's disease and related dementias, behavioral health needs. We also have a growing population of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities who are also aging, and providing support for their caregivers. The Planner 2 position is more in charge of the other responsibilities for our state mandate that have to do with looking at the health and demographic indicators and working on planning activities to support services for the general senior population. So that is the position that works with me to develop this four-year state plan, as well as other duties having to do with planning and advocacy.
Are there any other questions on the fiscal note? Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. If Danielle, if there was a reduction in manpower, would that any way jeopardize your federal reporting requirements and put the grant in jeopardy?
If thank you, Senator Bishop, through Chair McKinnon, it would compromise our ability to compile all of this information, to do all of the stakeholder work that's required for building the state plan, for reaching out to seniors to let them know about the services, about the services provided, but getting the information for the state plan based on senior needs. It could, compromise the quality of the state plan. The state plan as it stands right now is a pretty comprehensive document. In fact, other state and local agencies, nonprofit organizations who apply for federal and foundation and corporate grants utilize that information from the state plan in their applications for funding. So it could affect them as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Ms. Daniela, every other department is taking hits. Mm-hmm. Have you had any reductions?
In staff positions? No.
I
we've had tribal reductions. And we have worked really hard in trying to contain our travel expenses. During this last year, we have focused more on trying to do our board meetings by video conference, audio conference, to hold down those travel funds. I don't travel very much. When I do, I try to incorporate other trips in other purposes for that travel.
Ms. Daniela, you're a wonderful advocate for older Americans and a great asset to the state. If you could just give me the dollar amount that you've taken in cuts, that might be helpful to move the conversation.
$3,000.
In FY17. Did you have cuts before that?
No.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I apologize for not looking more extensively at the legislative audit that was done on the commission. Were any of the recommendations there that there should be a decrease in staff? Because I realize that when there are an audit like this, and the legislative auditor does a comprehensive job of looking at that, was anything like that recommended?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, no.
Were those questions asked that could you do with less staff?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, no.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Bishop.
I just have one follow-up, Madam Chairman, and I'll be finished. Thank you. If you could briefly tell me what corrective actions you've taken to solve audit finding one on noticing meetings and audit finding two.
We have, through the chair, Senator Bishop, we have amended our policies and procedures to include corrective action strategies to post all meeting notices for both board and committee, and that we now require our chairperson for the Commission on Aging, as well as our chair for the Legislative Advocacy Committee, to sign off on that watch list prior to its distribution.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
And those have been implemented.
Thank you. I just want to be clear that for the past 3 years, you've been asked to take a $3,000 cut. Is that accurate?
I believe it was only last year. It was just
to clarify, the Alaska Commission on Aging put forward a $3,000 travel rate.
Could you identify yourself?
Yes, I'm sorry. For the record, my name is Jaqueline Ziegenfuss, Admin Operations Manager for Senior and Disability Services. In fiscal year 17, the Alaska Commission on Aging put forward in the governor's budget a $3,000 travel reduction.
And was there any reductions prior to that in any other prior years in the last three that we've been drawing down savings accounts and reducing in other agencies?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Brief at ease. Back on the record, Senator Stoltz said you are bringing the extension of the Commission on Aging to the Senate. We had some members contact my office regarding the staff that was supporting the commission and questioning whether we could take a reduction of at least one, if not two, personnel to help in this time of need for Alaskans. And we understand that they're leveraging money, but most of the dollars, even though they show us interagency receipts, are general fund dollars that are moving from different departments. And so we're trying to understand whether there can be any consolidation on that fiscal note and a reduction in general fund spending, basically.
Thank you. Bill Stoltz, Senate District F. I think the committee would probably be remiss if you weren't looking at the fiscal issues here. And no diminution on the good work they're doing. I think most members of this committee know all the members of the Older Alaskans Commission. Certainly, a couple of them in my district. They're all good, hardworking Alaskans. Those really, the commission members are the face. If you look at there are a lot of other leaders we didn't hear about. Probably the most comprehensive study on Alaska seniors was done by the Mount Matsu Health Foundation, and a very extensive, in-depth study, and they did it for free. And I think that far exceeds anything that the commission staff itself has done. So a lot of the real work is done by people that have an ongoing interest in senior issues and recognize the opportunities and challenges. So no way a diminution of some of the good things they're doing and the outreaches. I can't, on a bill that I'm supporting, and I vigorously support their extension as the role they do on behalf of seniors and facilitating the continued receiving of the federal funds and the leverage. But I appreciate you guys are doing, you men and women here, are doing due diligence on the fiscal issues. That's It's not an issue we talked about extensively in the State Affairs Committee, but we're not the Finance Committee, and we don't try to pretend to be.
Senator Stoltz, we appreciate it. I didn't want you to be left out if you had some comments that the committee could consider. Are there questions for the sponsor? Thank you, Senator Stoltz.
Thank you.
Ms. Curtis, could we ask you to come to the microphone?
For the record, this is Chris Curtis, Legislative Auditor. Good morning.
Senate Finance. You know, it's tough to talk about reductions anywhere in Alaska's budget. We're talking about them internal in each one of our legislative offices. We're talking about them throughout the state right now, and how we pull back and face almost a $4 billion shortfall. Is there any insight that you can provide the committee in the statutory requirements the commission has in meeting the federal act? If we eliminate a position, can you give us a position or two? Can you give us a... Ms. Curtis, for us, it gets even broader. We have hundreds of commissions that are out there. Mm-hmm. I serve on Alaska Suicide Prevention Council, mm-hmm. and they are all trying to contract and respect what's happening around our state. But the board that I serve on is supported by, I believe, 1.5 folks. And we have a plan with the same kinds of goals and the same kind of advocacy that are happening. So 1.5 FTEs versus 4.0 FTEs.
Right. Through the chair, the audit does include on page 10 historical expenditure information, including how much general funds and federal funds they receive. We do not go in with the idea of recommending cuts to positions. However, I want to raise to the attention of the committee that this is before the committee because it's up for sunset. But like you said, there are possibly upwards of 100 boards, commissions out there that aren't up for sunset. And I have discussed with legislators in the past whether it's time for a full review of boards and commissions. I think an even-handed review of the staffing levels and needs of commissions is a very good idea, especially in this climate. But specifically to this board, if I understood correctly, would the elimination of one position impact the receipt of federal funds? If that's what we're looking at specifically, I would say no. I think the issue is of the extent to which the commission would serve. I mean, a cut to the commission is a cut to services provided to the population they serve. There's no way to not notice that. The quality, the extent to which they will be able to provide those services, I think that's what all agencies are facing right now. And I think it would be, could they do as good a job with one less? Probably not. Could they get through the fiscal climate with one? Probably yes.
Are there questions for our auditor? Ms. Curtis, thank you. I know how to do it. So I should send a letter asking, the Finance Committee co-chairman should send a letter asking for a review of how staff is utilized to support boards across the state. And we could expect that. Do you think it would fit within your schedule for having it back to the body by January of next year, or would it be at the end of the session for next year?
Chairman Kinnon, our agency has also faced cuts, and I think we're going to find this everywhere. I don't think it is going to be a possibility to get it back by next session, and I think more because of the impact of IRIS on our single audit and CAFR audit. It's going to be a huge, huge challenge the next year or two, even to get the audit opinion in time for this body to know the balances for FY16. Come next legislative session. So I don't believe we will have the resources to do that. However, we can do the best we can to provide the information. We can work with members of seeing what we could do, maybe not in an audit format. We did the last full review of boards and commission was done in, I believe, in 1992. So we do have something to look back on.
Okay, well, with the support of the committee, I'll move forward with at least exploring the idea with our auditor to see about that. Maybe we could have the auditor work with us on a framework and have our Labor and Commerce Committee actually structure some between session and interim meetings to go through an evaluation process to bring those boards before us and do some kind of an evaluation like that, that we're actively working with the auditor. Please, if the committee could give me any feedback, either now or via email over the next week, and then we'll make a formal letter request to the auditor. Senator Kelly, did you have any thoughts? Okay, thank you, Ms. Curtis. So, is there support from the committee to modify the fiscal note and reduce the fiscal note by one person or two? I'd like to hear feedback. I've heard, you know, I've had one member contact me. Again, this is not a target or any negative reflection on the good work that the commission does. This is hundreds of boards in Alaska that are utilizing general fund dollars, and we are laying off other Alaskans that are working in agencies right now. And so this is a process that boards that have staff are going to have to be looking at right now. Senator Kelly.
Madam Chair, I was just thinking about the conference committee that adjusts fiscal notes. And once, I'm just trying to remember, if we adjust a fiscal note down in here, we can't adjust it back up. And does that include positions? And that's just a question that we should probably answer. Because we're going to be facing this in conference committee, a number of these fiscal notes that we've adjusted here, and I just can't remember.
We'll check with legislative legal. That's who I was going to ask to, that's why I was going to postpone moving the bill until this afternoon so we could try to get some clarity on the fiscal note. We certainly can work with the executive director to try to give flexibility to accomplish the reduction if there's another way to accomplish the reduction of one person, but or two, I mean, the conversation. Any other feedback for me to consider as we advance a new fiscal note?
I just have a question, Madam Chair.
Senator Michicki.
It's unclear to me why the budget has increased from almost $100,000 from FY12. I was wondering if we knew of any positions being added in the last.
Ms. Daniella, would you
years.
Like to approach the mic? Do you have the answer to that question, why the budget since 2012 has went up by $100,000?
Unfortunately, I don't have that information in front of me, but I can tell you.
If you could identify.
For the record, I'm sorry. My name is Denise Daniello, Executive Director for the Commission on Aging. And in looking at the history here of our expenditures, most of the increase has come to be through the personnel service line, is what I'm seeing. That's been the consistent increase, and our staff members have been, three of the four have been on the commission, serving on the commission for the last 9 to 10 years, myself included. We have a new person who's in the Planner 2 position. If you look at the travel line, there's been a steady reduction in that line as well as in the services line. So most of the resources have been directed to the personnel line. And since we're having this conversation, I would like to offer a couple of ideas.
Actually,
no. At another time, okay.
Right. Yeah, Madam Chair, so more specifically, we're talking about personal services. So 2012, you're at 363.9. This year, your request is 478.8. So it's a little over $100,000. Is that, did we add any part of the organization?
Ms. Curtis, if you'd join us at the microphone. Ms. Curtis, do you have any insight on the increase from FY12?
Thank you. This is Chris Curtis. I just want to point out that chart is actuals, not budget. So we don't include in the audit budgets for 12, 13, or 14. So We do know that in FY15, the budget was $557,000. So it could be over these years they haven't been expending their full authorization.
Or could have a vacancy in there. We just heard
that's
there was some.
Likely when you see the dip in personal services, the vacancy.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Ms. Danielle.
Yes. Chair McKinnon, we had a vacancy in our Planner 2 position for an extended period of time. And this was during the time that we were getting ready to develop the state plan. The Planner 2 is very critical in that process. We made the decision, instead of hiring a new person in that Planner 2 who would come to us without, you know, the foundation of knowledge about senior services, we made the decision to contract out for this last state plan. And so we had a vacancy, an extended vacancy for that position.
Ms. Danielle, when was that position vacant? How long was it vacant?
It was vacant for probably 8 months,
in
perhaps.
In what year? Can you tell us what year that was?
That was last year.
And not to cut you off, we just are trying to be a little succinct. What recommendation do you have in trying to address at least a 20% reduction in your budget, if not a 25% reduction? That's one person.
Okay.
As the bird flies.
So, Chair McKinnon, there's a couple of ideas. I don't, you know, I haven't discussed these options with other agencies, but there is the option of maybe sharing an admin assistant position with another agency. So that could be a potential way to reduce funds. I would be also offer myself in terms of taking furlough as a way to cut, you know, my salary. So I would work a 4-day week instead of a 5-day week. So that could be another potential way to save funds.
Ms. Danielle, I don't want you to get out there in front of your board, which is why I said we could talk about this off the record so that you don't get crosswise with a board or do something that might not be say something that you might regret later. That would be in the record. We're happy to work with you over the next couple hours with my staff to see if we have ideas, if you want to call your chairman and talk to your chairman so that you at least have support inside of the board that you're working with. The board that I serve on, Alaska Suicide Prevention Council, actually shares their executive directors. And so that executive director actually covers three different boards, works with the mental health, works with alcohol, and works with suicide prevention. And so it is the goal of the finance committee to actually take a look at those boards. And as Chris says, you know, it hasn't been done since 1992. We have hundreds of boards out there now. Some of them have executive directors. We have about we have different kinds of boards that are out there. And is there any way that we can consolidate issues so that the staff that is being supported through general fund dollars can cover, at least from the higher level management, is there a way to group the topics together so that we can have some cost savings? Anyway, finance committee members, do I have your support in pursuing this direction?
Yes.
I just want to make sure that I'm not out there by myself. Senator Olson.
Madam Chairman, thank you. What I'd like to do is try and have the subject expounded on or expanded that Ms. Curtis talked about, and if there was a decrease in the number of personnel that were there, and I'm not sure who to ask the question to, but if there were if there was a personnel decrease, you would said maybe there probably would be a decrease in some of the services that are out there. Now, as you look at the whole aspect of the Commission on Aging, it deals with things, everything from, as the executive director talked about, education, and you have other things that are there with legislative intent, like dealing with somebody's meals on wheels or heat in the home, which I look at it for as more of a life safety. Education is important. I believe in education, but at least education in my, if you're going to, you know, we have several people that are over 90 in my hometown of Golovin, but I don't think you're going to get educators out there. It's just too expensive to go out there and, you know, try and caution them on how not to fall. So with that, I was wondering if either one of the, either you or the executive director could expand on that topic, which services would most likely be affected if there was a decrease in the number of personnel.
Senator Olson, through the chair.
Chris Curtis.
Chris Curtis, legislative auditor. It would all depend on how the commission decides to implement the cuts. There's such a wide range of things that they could choose to do. So I think they, along with other boards, would have to sit down and really think about their priorities and implementing the cut.
No further questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Thanks. Thank you, Ms. Daniela. And we understand, I've been an executive director with a projection of a loss, and I understand looking at the faces of your employees and feeling responsible for both their families that the job is supporting, and absolutely understand the shock. Anything else on SB 124? So with that, I'd like to recess. Do I have a meeting schedule? So we can adjourn. We'll bring this up. I'll work with Legislative Finance, both Mr. Chairman and Co-Chairman Kelly, to answer your question on how that works with the operating budget out there. I believe FY17 may not have their budget dollars in it, but we'll check. Because they're, well, it says it's included in the governor's budget, so it's there. As well as looking at a reduction in spend. Anything else? Seeing none, we're adjourned. One other thing before we adjourn. SB1, I said during one of the sessions that SB1 would be back before the body in a hopes to move it on Friday morning. So if we will have a CS, it will be technical changes only. There is one issue that remains about the source of where enforcement or education would happen on that. That will not be included in the CS at this time. We do have an amendment that could address another member's concern about that, but the CS before you will be the housekeeping issues that were raised by the sponsor at the table, and we'll take on any amendments after that. So. Just want to let the general public know we'll have that before us tomorrow. With that, we're adjourned.